Okay. Well, I feel like I'm finally getting back in the swing of things after a couple week break. We are well into this old school summer series. I don't know if you've been enjoying it or not. If you have, you only have 4 more weeks to enjoy it. If you haven't been, you only have 4 more weeks to endure it. So either way you look at it, it's a win, I guess. So we are gonna probably just jump right in here. So we've been going over Old Testament stories that you would have heard in Sunday school for the summer, hence the name Old School Summer. And so if this is your first Sunday here for this, or you've been here for all of them and you just don't remember, we'll do a quick little recap of each week. In the first week, we talked about Adam and Eve, and we saw how God made the heavens and the earth and everything in it, and it was good. And Adam and Eve fell into temptation, and the serpent brought this predicament toward Eve, and they fell for it, right? And so sin was introduced into the world, and the story didn't end there, obviously. Here we all are, right? We learned that the plan for restoration was immediately implemented, and that plan for restoring mankind was always Jesus. Now, in week two, we talked about Noah, who was completely alone in a world of corruption and sin. And he was the only one that God found to be righteous. And so we saw God give Noah this huge task of building this massive boat that would house all the life left on our planet. And God makes this covenant with Noah and his family to fill the earth and rule once again, just like the covenant we saw God give Adam and Eve 1,000 years before. And so in week three, we looked at Abraham from his father Terah leaving toward the promised land and falling short to Abram going up to Mount Moriah and sacrificing or supposed sacrificing his son that he had waited so long for. And we covered the calling and the legacy and the implications of the covenant between God and Abraham and the generations to follow. We also looked at the parallels of this act of figurative sacrifice, right? God provides a ram at the end and there was no sacrifice. But we compared that with the actual sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. And we've seen all sorts of parallels to the gospel of Jesus through all these Old Testament stories. Now in week four, we made it all the way through the Exodus, the story of Moses and God revealing his name as Yahweh for the first time. We looked at the plagues and how they related to not only creation, but Yahweh launching an attack on the gods of Egypt. And lastly, we saw probably the strongest foreshadowing of Jesus yet, which was in the Passover. And that brings us to week five. Now, we took a 2 week break. Pastor Charlie preached for a couple weeks. I was on vacation. But last week, we jumped back in and we talked about Samson. We saw God honor his covenant with Samson personally amidst lots and lots of bad decisions. We also saw God honor his covenant with the people of Israel as a whole by using Samson as he promised to defeat the Philistines. It just so happened to be in Samson's death that this happened. So today we're going to move ahead, but not by much. Today we're going to talk about the story of Ruth. Now, before we get there, we'll fill in the gaps on how the book of Judges ends. Remember, we were in Judges last week through Samson. Everybody remember that? Okay, good deal. So, today, these final chapters in Judges, they show the moral and the spiritual chaos of Israel during a time when everyone was doing right in their own eyes, as you see in Judges chapter 17 and 21, is said by the author a few times. These stories, they reveal how far people had drifted from God's commands. Now, Judges 17 and 18, or last week we left off in chapter 16. Judges 17 and 18 is a story of Micah and then the Danites. Now, a man named Micah, he makes an idol and hires a Levite as his personal priest. He does this violating God's law. Now, this shows how corrupt even religious leadership had become at the time. This was a time of corruption for Israel. Chapter 18, the tribe of Dan, seeking new territory, steals the idol and the priest from Micah, and they set up the idol in their new city. And this illustrates growing idolatry and disregard for God's commands. Now, in chapter 19 through 21, it gets a lot worse. chapter 19, a Levite and his concubine stay in the town of Gibeah in Benjamin, and the townsmen brutally abuse this woman, and she dies. And then chapter 20, the other tribes demand justice for this act from the tribe of Benjamin. But Benjamin defends Gibeah, and then this civil war breaks out. And this leads to Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, almost being destroyed. And so then chapter 21 and how the book of Judges ends is trying to preserve this tribe of Benjamin, this one of the 12 tribes of Israel. And so after realizing that a tribe of Israel was nearly wiped out, the other tribes try and find wives for the surviving Benjaminites, and they do this through other morally questionable actions, trying to preserve the tribe. So in the last chapters of Judges, you have moral anarchy. Without centralized leadership or obedience to God, the society sort of collapses into chaos. You also have spiritual confusion. You have entire tribes of Israel turning to idolatry. And then you have, lastly, the ending of the book, a need for a godly king. Now, the book ends longing for a leader who will guide Israel in righteousness, which happens sooner than later in Saul and then David. But this is also a foreshadowing for the need of a true king, which is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus, right? So we're already looking forward to this king, this Messiah that will come and save Israel. So today, we're going to talk about the story of Ruth. Now, Ruth 1:1 begins with, in the days when the judges ruled. So that tells us this story is taking place within the time period of the book of Judges that we just talked about, likely near the end. Most scholars have estimate Ruth living sometime between 1200 and 1100 BC, likely during the time that Samuel, who the last judge, was kind of the judge over Israel. And so, the book of Ruth, it's not a sequel to Judges, but it's a spotlight story. It occurs within the era. It's offering this contrast of faithfulness and redemption against the backdrop of moral and social chaos in Judges. So if Judges is the story of Israel during a 400-year span, Ruth is the story of a few individuals in that time frame who were not judges. But we're going to find that they were still very important in the overall story, especially that relates to Jesus. So the book of Ruth is 4 chapters long. You can read it in about 10 or 15 minutes in full. And as we've been doing in this series, we're going to break our story into parts. Now, the first one we're going to call Loss and Loyalty. How many of you are familiar with the story of Ruth? Okay, good. About half of us. Good deal. All right. So I think we'll all learn something today anyway, whether you're familiar or not. So loss and loyalty. The story starts out with a couple from Bethlehem, not Mary and Joseph, but Elimelech and Naomi. Now, Naomi and Elimelech have 2 sons. Their names were Mahlon and Chilion. Together, this family leaves Bethlehem, which is in Judah, right, one of the 12 tribes of Israel, and they go to Moab because of a famine. Can you guys see this? I wonder if my laser still works on this. Watch your eyes, everybody. Hey, look at that. All right, so you see Jerusalem right here. Bethlehem would have been just to the south, right about there. And then over here, we have the kingdom of Moab. So there's a famine in Bethlehem, just south of Jerusalem. So we see a family go probably across over here. This is the Dead Sea, across around Jericho, and then down here into the kingdom of Moab. That would have been probably their route. So while they're in Moab, something bad happens. Elimelech, the husband, the father, dies. This leaves Naomi and her 2 sons. Now, each of the sons get married, one to a lady named Orpah, not Oprah, no matter what autocorrect says, right? It's Oprah in here like 4 times. I finally stopped fighting with my computer and just let it be Oprah. Anyway, so one lady named Orpah, and then the other lady named Ruth. Well, we really don't know how, but both of the sons end up dying in Moab. Now, this leaves Naomi and Ruth and Orpah all by themselves. So Naomi gets word that Bethlehem has turned around and is no longer in famine. So the 3 ladies prepare to head back to Bethlehem together. and they're all packed up, and Naomi basically realizes what's about to happen and starts pleading with her daughter-in-laws to stay and find husbands and make new lives for themselves. Long story short, Orpah takes her up on that offer, right? And that's pretty much the last we hear of her. She stays in Moab, and then Ruth decides she needs to go back to Bethlehem with Naomi. So we're going to pick up the story there in Ruth 1:16 through 22. This is Ruth basically stating her allegiance to Naomi. So this is Ruth 16, or 1, verses 16 through 22. It says this, "But Ruth replied, 'Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me.' When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, 'Can this be Naomi?' 'Don't call me Naomi,' she told them. 'Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me.' So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning." So they returned to Bethlehem, right? Not necessarily in good spirits. And I guess you probably wouldn't be either, right? If you had lost your husband or sons or both in Naomi's case, Naomi is bitter. And to expand on that a bit, if you caught it, she even tries to change her name to Mara, which means bitter. Now, in her defense, the name Naomi means pleasant, and she was not feeling that way. And in fact, she even says that God made her this way, right? God has afflicted me. God has made me empty. Have you ever felt this way? Maybe something out of your control happens and you're just not happy about it. Wouldn't it be freeing to be that honest? Sorry, that's not my name this week, right? My name is bummed out. That's what you can call me this week. So Naomi and Ruth, they're back in Bethlehem, but they are not in a good way. So let's see what happens in the next part of our story. This is chapter 2, and we'll call it the field of provision. So Ruth goes out to glean the fields. Now remember, they're back in Judah, right? In Bethlehem in Judah. And last week we talked about the last three books of the Torah. Remember this? We covered a lot last week. But the last three books in the Torah, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, these are the books that laid out the law for Israel. And any good Israelite would have had these laws pretty well committed to memory. So when Ruth goes to glean the fields, this was a practice that was commonly done by the poor and the foreigners in the land. This was also the law from God for the farmers to make it available for poor and foreigners to do this. And we see that in Leviticus 19, verses 9 through 10. It says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God." So Leviticus especially, we see God state a rule and then say, "I am the Lord your God," like sealing, "This is what I want you to do." And so this is his command. And so what we're seeing hundreds of years later, after Moses wrote these laws from God, we're seeing this in practice. Ruth goes to this field to glean, and it just so happens to belong to a man named Boaz. Now, Ruth doesn't know any of this yet, but Boaz is a relative of Naomi's late husband, Elimelech. And Boaz has heard of the loyalty that Ruth has shown Naomi and all of the loss that's happened with the family. And so Boaz ends up providing Ruth with food and water and protection. And he tells his workers to leave even extra grain for her. Now, Ruth is amazed at his kindness, especially as a foreign woman. So she returns to Naomi with this large amount of barley, about 30 pounds of it. That's a lot of light grain, right? 30 pounds. So that's where we're going to pick up the story. She comes back home after gleaning with this huge sack of barley. And this is what Naomi says to her. This is in Ruth 2, 19 through 23. It says, her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked today with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So we see this weird language that Naomi uses in verse 20. She says that Boaz is one of their guardian redeemers. Now, that's kind of a weird thing to say, right? But this was a concept that would have been very common in ancient Israel. It was basically a legal term that meant Boaz was obligated to help Naomi as a family member who had run into some difficulty. Now, this whole chapter is such a cool part of the story because it's blatantly showing God's provision. While Boaz seemed obligated to help, right, he was, per custom, Ruth just so happened to pick Boaz's field to glean. Right? God knew exactly what he was doing and exactly where to lead her. Now, this is also a story of Ruth's kindness being rewarded. She went from this promising life where some young, handsome fellow from Bethlehem comes into town and marries this young Moabite woman, and she was wanted, and she had security and a future, and all of a sudden, it was gone. Instead of crawling into a hole or going back home to her father and mother, Ruth had mercy on Naomi, and now God is rewarding it. I can't imagine what she must have been thinking or feeling walking to that field to glean with all the other poor people, with the other foreigners, people who were down on their luck. I'm sure it was very humbling. I'm sure she had to have thought about life when she had a husband and a future and security, and now she's picking barley and wheat to survive. Ruth had showed so much kindness and selflessness. Remember, she was urged, stay in your country, stay in Moab, find a husband, make a life for yourself. She shows so much selflessness up to this point, and a huge part of this story is God's faithfulness and rewards toward her, toward Ruth. So, Ruth continues to hang around Boaz and his workers, and chapter 3 is the next part of our story, and we'll call this part a bold request. So one day, Naomi decides that she needs to help Ruth find a place to live, which is a nice way of saying she needs a husband, right? She wants Ruth out of the house and with someone else. She needs to find a husband. So she says, "What about that nice boy Boaz that you've been working for?" And she says, here's what you do. You put on some nice perfume, you get all dressed up, you wait till he gets nice and full. This is paraphrasing, but it's in there. You can read it. You wait till he gets nice and full and he falls asleep. Then you just go lay down next to him. And so that's what Ruth does. And when Boaz wakes up, naturally he's surprised. He asks Ruth what she's up to, and basically she tells Boaz that she wants him to marry her so that their family line can be preserved as it was going to be when she was married to his relative. And so Boaz says this really weird thing, not what you would think, and we'll read that and then we'll talk about it. So we're picking up here in chapter 3, verses 12 through 18. This is Boaz responding to all that just happened. "Although it is true that I'm a guardian redeemer of your family, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, no one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor. He also said, bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out. When she did so, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and placed the bundle on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, how did it go, my daughter? Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then Naomi said, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. And so that's how chapter 3 ends. That's the end of that section. So why would Boaz say this? She asked to marry him, and he says, there might be somebody better for you. There might be somebody that wants to. This was the custom, right? While it was custom that Boaz had an obligation to help being family, to help the widows out in his family, if he was going to redeem Ruth by marrying her, he needed to offer it to someone who was more closely related to her husband and her husband's father. It's a weird thing to think about, right? The very weird thing. Remember, Ruth is not related to these people. Her husband was. So, but still a very weird thing, right? I don't think if I were to die, I don't think I would want my brother, right? Anybody else? No? Yeah, no, it's weird, right? Okay. It's not just me. Can we agree this is weird? This is not loud enough, guys. Is this weird? Okay, thank you. Golly, I was about to rethink my whole life here. Okay, so it's a very odd thing to think about, but all Boaz is doing here is following the custom, right? He's trying to obey God's law, and in the meantime, he even sends her home with this huge thing of barley, still taking care of Naomi, right? He says, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. And so Naomi finishes that chapter up by saying, it's going to get settled today, right? He sent us this big bag of barley. He is on it. All right, so just wait until he settles this thing today. So that's the end of, or that's going to bring us to the end of the story, which is chapter 4, and we'll call this part Redemption and Legacy. Now, chapter 4 starts out with Boaz at the city gate, and he brings along 10 elders from the town with him. And when this relative that he's talking about, we don't know his name, but when this relative who is next in line comes along, Boaz tells him that he has the right to Elimelech's land, along with it, the responsibility of caring for Naomi, remember, Elimelech's wife, and then lastly, bringing in Ruth as his wife. And in hearing this, he quickly says, yes, and then he thinks about it, and he says, just kidding. He says, that's going to mess up my family dynamic, which is a nice way of saying, I already have a wife. That's going to be a problem, right? He was all in it with the land and another mother-in-law was okay, but when a second wife, he said, never mind, that's not going to work. So Boaz, in front of these witnesses, these 10 elders, takes on the land of Elimelech, he takes on care for Naomi, and then lastly takes Ruth as his wife. And that's where we're going to pick up the story. This is not Ruth 3, this is Ruth 4, chapter 4, verses 13 through 16. It says this, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, and who is better to you than 7 sons, has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So this story is set, that's how it ends. That's the end of the story, almost. This story is set in the time frame of the book of Judges. And while it's not a story about Israel as a whole, it's a story about 3 individuals who happen to play a huge role in the future of Israel. I'm not sure if you caught it at the end there of the passage that we just read, but the baby that ends up being born from Ruth is the grandfather of King David. That's a pretty big deal, right? Israel's longing for this king, and King David fulfills that role, at least temporarily. So I want to make sure and communicate this morning is this: God is in the business of restoration. We have seen this from the beginning. God redeems our stories, starting with Adam and Eve and every single story we've read. God redeems our stories. The story of Ruth starts out very sad, right? Security to poverty, wife to widow, comfort and comfort of home to stranger in a foreign land. God redeems all of it. He comes through again, and instead of living in obscurity, God places Ruth in the field of who so happens to be the great-grandfather of King David. And just so happens that God rewards Ruth by letting her be the great-grandmother of King David. Now, Ruth, the book of Ruth ends verses 18 to like 23. It's a lineage, and it traces David all the way back in time to Perez. And you might be thinking, who is Perez? Well, Perez was the son of Judah, right? Judah, the tribe of Israel that they're currently living in, that Bethlehem's in, that Jerusalem sits in. It's kind of the big one, right? Judah was one of the 12 sons of Jacob. Jacob was the son of Isaac, and Isaac the son of Abraham, right? Now remember the covenant that God made to Abraham. He was going to bless his lineage and make a great nation out of him. Now here we are, 1,000 years down the road, and we're seeing God stay true to his covenant. And it's because of the story of Ruth that Abraham is David's 11-time great-grandfather. 11th great, however you would say that. I don't want to say great 11 times is what I'm getting at. This is such a cool story plopped right in the middle of a time of chaos for Israel. This story is a light in the darkness of their time, showing that God's still in control and staying true to his word. How awesome is that? In all this chaos and craziness and civil war and murder and everything else that's happening in Judges, there's God redeeming this story. As we've done every week, we'll connect this story to Jesus. And this week, it is very easy to do that. You might know where I'm going with this. But we trace the lineage back 1,000 years to Abraham. But what happens if we trace it forward 1,000 years? We end up getting Jesus out of this very same lineage. Ruth plays a huge part in the story of Jesus. There's 2,000 years between Abraham and Jesus, and you see Ruth right in the center, 1,000 years on either side. This widowed young woman who just did what she knew to be right by her mother-in-law. How cool is that? Now remember this story we've been talking about the last several weeks. This is the story of God and how he relates to his people. And it's been so cool to see all the ways that God weaves this covenant together from so many different angles. And God has always rewarded faithfulness, and specifically faithfulness in the ordinary. He brings people along like Ruth who are just being faithful to who God called them to be, even in the midst of struggle and grief. So to end today, I want to read a short quote by Carolyn James. She's the author of a book called The Gospel of Ruth. She says this: Ruth is not a passive recipient of grace. She is a woman of bold faith, loyal love, and courageous initiative. So what can we implement to our lives from this story? And I think it's those three things. And that's my challenge for you this week: to live with bold faith, to live out loyalty and love, and to show courageous initiative, especially when prompted by the Holy Spirit. God rewards our faithfulness, and he wants to use people just like you and me the same way that he used Ruth and so many others throughout history. Are you willing to be used today? Would you pray with me? Father, thank you for another story, another connection, another piece of the puzzle of your story and how you relate to mankind. God, we're so thankful that you redeem our stories. We could probably find 1,000 instances where you've taken a story that was no good, that seemed hopeless, and you filled it full of hope and redemption, and you turned it around and you used it for your good. God, we thank you for weaving this story together, that we can go back and see all the places that you have been working and moving everything for your good. God, help us to live in that this week. Help us to be a people of bold faith. Help us to be a people of loyalty and love, and help us to have courageous initiative. Whether we're in a good spot, whether our story's in a great spot, or whether we are in a pretty low place. God, we just can't thank you enough for your grace and your redemption and your truth. Help us to live in that this week. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Worship team's going to sing a song. Our altars here are always open. If you feel like you've felt God speaking to you this morning and you want to respond, it's a great place to do so. Would you stand and sing with us and use these next few moments to reflect?